Hello and welcome to What Else Do You Do? I'm your host, Misao. I'm an indie producer in Montreal working for Studio Cut to Bits. And today we have Alex Earle. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Alex Earle. I'm a producer living in the north of England, working for a company called Radical Forge. Yeah.
Usually we talk a little bit more about what you do professionally, but I guess we'll just go straight into it.
You can go into it. Like, I'm open for anything. Far away.
So since this podcast is called What Else Do You Do? What else do you do? Or did you
do? It's kind of a mix, the core of everything that I've done, be it professionally or just kind of for fun, is that I love making stuff. Like, that's it. I just feel happiest when I'm creating things. And so I guess that kind of drive, and also I guess maybe possibly the naive belief that everything I do I should enjoy, which I've managed to do up till now in my life, has led me to my pursuits. So I started off in theater. I used to do acting in musical theater. That was like my big thing, and I do like little musical tours to Edinburgh Fringe and love doing that, and writing plays and kind of working in the theater, the place and kind of space. And then got into like the behind the scenes of that as a technician, and I did live theater tours for a couple of years of doing like sound and lighting and rigging. I love doing that. And then that led me into kind of content creation for theater, because I noticed that, like, you know, I used to rot away watching YouTube and Twitch, and I was like, people don't know these skills in the theater world. I can film and live stream for people for like theater shows and like help up and coming artists promo their work by capturing it in a decent quality. So I started doing that for a couple of years and do like freelance filmography in dance and film and theater. And then from there, music as well. I did kind of parallel that. I did a degree in music, and I love playing instruments. And still, even like all around me, I've got synthesizers and guitars and pianos and stuff. And like, music is like my heart and soul. That I don't think I'd want to do it for a career, but I love that I can just express myself musically and create these ideas. Or even for like little game demos I'm doing, I can throw together some music for it, and that's like a fun thing to do. And then yeah, that led me to games as through my life. I got an older brother, like Adrian Al. Shout out my brother. He's like an amazing writer and poet, and we've always played games together. That's how we bonded as brothers. And so just going from like, oh, I love playing like Metal Arms Glitching the System and Super Smash Bros. And Mario Sunshine, to being like, oh, I understand why I like these games, to like, can I make this? And then the answer obviously being yes, because that's what I do now, like facilitating teams to make a video games. Like, yeah, it's as long as I'm making stuff, like maybe I'll stay in games for a long time, maybe I won't, I'm not sure. But as long as I feel happy and I'm creating something, that's what I love doing. So yeah, that's the kind of what else do I do, is that I just like to make stuff, and that film and theater and games have been so far. But I don't know what's next, honestly. If something else catches my eye, like I've thought film directing would be pretty cool. I've obviously done filmography, but that's a different discipline. But I'd maybe love to like direct a film and such. But who knows? As long as I'm happy and making stuff, that's what I'm doing.
I don't know. Making films seems even scarier than making video games. Like, I don't know. Like, indie yeah. games is not exactly like a stable profession, but making films makes making video games look like a reasonable jobby job.
Yeah, the film, like the closest I've been in the film world is that, like, when I was at university, I made friends with a lot of people from like did our film kind of a course, I guess, at Staffs University. So I worked on a few projects with some like film, nothing crazy major. Like, I think one of the projects we did won like a local award thing, because we did a musical called When the Bombs Come Down, that was like, imagine the apocalypse happens and four women from a small English town that meet in a yoga class survive the apocalypse and how they deal with that. And it was a short film just based around that I wrote, this kind of like weirdly British dry humor musical with my friend. It was like a half an hour short, and that was really fun to do. That was like a 4 or 5 months of my life, of the recording and doing the soundtrack and doing the shoots and then the pickups and then the editing and then the little circuit that we toured it around at small festivals. And I loved doing that, and that's that kind of scale of stuff. I'd love to do something bigger. And like, mm-hmm. I've dabbled in other bits, like my brother I mentioned before being a poet, I worked with him on a film version of his poem. As in the UK, we've got a thing called the BBC that's like our broadcasting network. We got commissioned by the BBC to make a film of one of his poems. So I worked with him on the treatment and developing it into like the narrative. And then whilst I didn't go directorially, I scored the film. So I did the music for it, because it's the kind of realm mm-hmm. I felt more comfortable. So that was also really cool to like go on BBC iPlayer. That's kind of like, I guess, the BBC version of like HBO Go, but for like the BBC stuff. And we got to see mm-hmm. our film premiere on that, which is pretty nice. So
that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. More stuff like that. Film is cool. I love the art of kind of narrative and storytelling, but for now, I think my interest is in like trying to do cool stuff in that in games, I guess, because obviously people, we have cinematic games, you know, our Last of Us and Uncharted and all narrative stuff. Like one of my favorite games of all time is Firewatch. I love that. And like, I'm so surprised how much I fell in love with these characters that I just hear their voices and their conversations and that how I steer that around this beautiful forest environment. I'd love to kind of bring my theatrical or film kind of interest into making an experience similar to that. Like, that's why I'm quite excited for, I mean, as of recording tomorrow, I think that game 12 Minutes comes out, which looks really cool, by Annapurna, like that kind of thing with Daisy Ridley and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Willem Dafoe. That looks really cool because cool actors, cool performances, and a cool conceit around looping time and something like that.
Okay, so you told me that like right before getting into games, kind of your like kind of the bridge was the fact that you were involved in organizing events.
Yeah, managing events. For 6 years, I worked with a lovely team called B Festival, which is the Birmingham European Theatre Festival. And I started off as like a volunteer there, which is like a cool opportunity that one of my mates was like, oh, yo, come volunteer for this cool festival. There's loads of cool European people here and they're all dancers and mimes and stuff. And I was like, I've never seen anything like that. Let's go. So they pay me in like bus fare and meals and stuff. And I was helping in this cool abandoned factory, like in the north of Birmingham, like set up a faux stage and wiring and like chairs and stuff and make a little cafe and a bar and a gallery and a stage, and I loved it. Like, I fell in love with it. It was so cool to, I guess, facilitate art in its rawest form. That there was no crazy big budgets, there was no celebrities, it was just people that were passionate about what they wanted to do flying across the world on whatever budget they could to Birmingham of all places in England and doing this cool exchange and kind of trade of ideas and work and like inspirations and such. And then from being a volunteer there, I came back the next year and volunteered, and then I started working on their website because like I love a bit of web dev and could do like some basic CSS and HTML stuff, so help build their website. And then they were like, hey, we like you and your web stuff was cool. Do you want to work on our digital marketing? And I was like, hell yeah. So then I became the digital marketing lead of the festival and helped shape like all the social media and digital style and advertising of the festival and the video trailers. Like each year we shoot like a little mini, like kind of like 3 minute trailer kind of the festival. But obviously you can't show footage from a festival that hasn't happened. So we'd create this weird kind of like a visual conceit, I guess, a kind of like a vibe of the festival linked around a strong image that was the centerpiece of each year. So it was cool to experiment and mess around with the team that we had in the local arts community to make these little kind of vignettes that would kind of give you an essence of the vibe of the festival for that year. And so yeah, that was my big event thing. And then as parallel to that, 1 year someone offered me the chance to do the same thing for a music festival. So I got to work at a really cool music festival called Fieldview Festival down in the south of England and did similar kind of digital marketing things and also did a sound tech work that was like an absolute blast because like I'd literally just graduated uni and I was just in my uni house being like, what's next? And someone was like, come do a music festival. And I was like, hell yeah. And it was an absolute dream. Like I loved it. Met some lovely people working there. It really helped me hone my filmography skills as well, because like I'd work alongside the film and edit team to make the little vignettes of like Instagram and social media videos, because we just had like a little team of people all day walking around the festival filming and stuff and like trying to find the cool shots or cool looking people or cool outfits to try and portray and communicate the style and vibe of the festival for that music festival. It was really cool, and I love doing that. It was like a little dream come true working at a music festival, because music means like so much to me. And even meeting some artists that like had inspired me to write my dissertation on music at the time, I thought that was really cool. That I just like pure coincidence, because I didn't know the lineup when I started doing the festival, just got to meet people that was like, oh my god, you're literally like my idol. That's hella cool. So that was nice.
So how did that like? What additional steps led you from there to video games? Because okay, like we started off in theater, we worked our way through the like theatrical kind of like performance events to musical, music festival. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're doing social media, digital presence for a music festival. Like, okay, I feel like we still have a couple more steps before we were in the games industry.
So like, it was around like 2016-ish when I was still at university and kind of like building up and doing some of this stuff around. It's all lots of parallel things. One of my close friends was like, hey, like I do this thing, because he did games at university while I did music, but we lived together. He was like, hey, I do this thing where like I volunteer at events and like help out on indie game stands. This amazing collective called the Tentacle Zone, or the Tentacle Collective, back when I joined, like worked with them. And they would like get a little space, kind of like the Indie Mega Booth, but like on a slightly smaller scale. They did that in the UK. And okay. So I met those guys and gelled with them. And they were like, yo, you've got cool charisma and you're good with talking to people and setting up stuff, as well as like knowing the tech, because if a PC breaks or there's a bug in a build, you can figure out how to reset it or whatever. Like, would you want to come volunteer with us? And so I did. And that's how I got onto it, because like, as well as having, I guess, the passion and knowledge for games and the interest in the space, I was just good at talking to people that I'd have the charisma. Because obviously game devs are amazing, lovely people, but I'm not expecting every game dev to have like a, you know, a thing for acting or wanting to be really extroverted. And like, you know, as much as anyone, how draining shows can be. And like, it's just nice that I could come in as a volunteer and just be like, oh, I'm literally here just to like make sure people play your thing and you can go off and like have a cool time. So I ended up making loads of really lovely friends and meeting people that worked on like Gang Beasts and some titles for like Code Sync and other stuff, because I was like, oh, I'll demo your game, you guys go off, have lunch, and then actually enjoy the show, because like I'm here volunteering and then later being paid to just like be here and like demo your games for you. And so that's how I ended up like building like a little community and making lovely friends. And did that for like a couple of years until Nintendo offered me like, hey, do you want to do what you're doing for them, but for Nintendo? And then that's why I became like a brand ambassador for Nintendo for a couple of years, and then got to work on stuff like the launch of Smash Bros. Ultimate and Super Mario Party and Pokemon Sword and Shield. Not Sword and Shield, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, that one, the motion controlling one, and a few others. But yeah, I love shows. I love the energy of like people coming and trying out games, and just like, especially in the indie space, because for so many people, like, I feel like we definitely struggle with a issue of oversaturation in the gaming space. And that, whilst I think Spotify has got it nailed, I love Spotify because Spotify gives me the music. It sussed me. It knows I love my R&B and my jazz and my alt rock, and I just get fed a Discover Weekly playlist each week, and I'm like, this is great. I found so many new artists from that. But games, at least, like, doesn't seem to have a stronger thing. Like, Steam definitely does recommend you things.
Yeah, but it's like, not Steam recommendation is like, yeah, and I feel like Steam is always recommending me stuff that I already know.
Fair. Like, but yeah, like
I don't know. Maybe I'm just like a grumpy person, because like even Spotify, I'm like, some weeks Spotify, the Spotify recommend list, and like, holy shit, this is fucking amazing. Like, there's all these people that I've never heard of. And this is all
maybe
great.
Maybe from then, my like, marketing sometimes background, like, I love data, and like, whilst I know there's legitimate concerns about like people's privacy and like data being used for nefarious reasons, I love to train algorithms. Like, I have trained the hell out of my Facebook and my Instagram, my Spotify, that if I like something, I tell it. And if I don't, I will too. Be like, I don't want to see this, and I actively do.
I make it a point to like things that I like, and cool. Whatever reason, like, I don't know, Spotify is hit or miss. Yeah. Like, sometimes I'm like, fair. Spotify, this is just Tarantino soundtracks. Like, you are fucking phoning it in. Like, this is just Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. Like, this whole fucking week.
But you know, maybe that's a guilty pleasure there. Maybe that's like fair play. Maybe it knows that deep down you
great.
Appreciate
that's
that.
Great.
Like, yeah.
I do appreciate it.
You do want something new. You want something like different.
But like, you know, like, I feel like sometimes it does feel like cheating. I mean, like, you know, there's like what? Like 30 songs in a weekly playlist,
yeah,
and then like when 2/3 of it is literally just like two Tarantino films, I'm like, dude,
I do feel that sometimes.
I get machine, right? Like,
sometimes I get bits where it's like, oh yeah, like we heard you listen to one Japanese alt pop band. Do you want to hear every anime intro from the 90s to the like now? And I'm like, I appreciate this, and you're not wrong, but please give me some variety. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but. Yeah, I think from
that. I also listen to kind of weirder stuff too, which can be kind of hit or miss.
Now that's true. When like, you find a niche artist and they don't really fit firmly into a box, Spotify struggles being like, well, there's nothing else like this. So they're trying to
listen to shit. Like, I, yeah.
How are we talking? Go on.
I mean, it's not that weird, I guess. Like, I like jazz pop and jazz punk.
That's fair. That's fair.
From Japan, which Spotify doesn't know what to do with at all. I think not enough people listen to it because they're not primarily a Japanese platform, so that's too obscure for them, because it's like obscure genre within like a market that's smaller as a whole for them. So you know, I think it's like 23andMe, like, evidently, like, they're super underrepresented in Asia. So like, if you submit your DNA, like, they're just like, their source of data is so low that it can just be like whatever. Whereas like, if you're like white European, they're like, we have 10 million.
They know the demographics they're leaning to. I've been trying to get more into, like, especially like Japanese jazz pop music, because there's a few bands that I've got through my Spotify weekly that I love. But like, for me, organically discover, that's the thing. I don't know, because a lot of their artist names are in a language that Japanese, I can't read, and I can't search for it because I don't know what I'm looking for. So if there's everyone that has like brackets English word, that one I'll be like, I'll know it and I'll add it to my list and I can get back to it. But
we won't do this on air because this is probably boring.
This will only be exciting to like two people.
But we'll talk about Japanese jazz pop if you like. I mean that, and then like I like kind of more like avant-garde. Like I like kind of music that kind of pushes the limit a little bit. So you know, like Captain Beefheart, or you know,
I dig it.
Yeah. So
like, I'm pretty open-minded.
But that kind of stuff, like, it's very easy
fit
to just
into boxes. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't fit into boxes, and it's also very easy to just kind of go too far and it just turns into garbage.
There's a fine line you got to tread.
So sometimes like I get recommendations from Spotify where I'm just like, I just can't. Or it's too soft. Sometimes it's just too soft.
I think I'm just
crotchety and old. I think that's the problem.
I love music. Music's like my go-to. Like if I'm not at work, because I find it hard to work and listen to music unless I'm like maybe doing some kind of.
I like focusing on it. So yeah.
I love knowing and listening to an album. Like if I'm like, oh, a new album's come out from an artist, I will sit down and be like headphones on and just appreciate it. Or I'll sit and put it on my vinyl player or through my little hi-fi. I built like a little Raspberry Pi computer recently that's just like a little music server plugged into my hi-fi so I can Spotify cast a bit, or I've got like a little hard drive of like all my Bandcamp purchases that just stream straight into the little thing, which plays a pretty good quality. So it's like I had a Raspberry Pi lying around from years ago that my brother bought me to turn into like a little emulation thing, but I was like, I'm gonna make a music box because I don't have one of those. So that's my little like last month project. But yeah, I love giving music the attention it deserves. And like I just love listening to music properly. I don't want to sound like elitist, like, and be like, oh, you have to listen to this hi-fi and this high quality thing. Now, like, obviously, you're fine to listen to stuff through your headphones or your phone speakers or whatever. I mean, like, but
the fact that you're
like
saying that you like to do something is not. Yeah. The fact that you're saying.
You see it now, though, in like the film spaces. That like the guy that's directing Dune, he was like criticizing people how dare you watch Dune on a TV? I'm like, I'd rather people watch Dune on a TV or a fucking iPhone than not watch it at all. You know what I mean? Like, I get that there's legitimate concerns with box office and money and that kind of thing, but make art accessible. Like, even though it makes me cringe a little that I might make a song and someone listens to it through tinny iPod speakers, they're still listening to it and they're still appreciating it at the end of the day. So I can't be too mad. Like,
I don't know. I think video game people are going to be like significantly less sympathetic to all of this because, like, you know, a lot of times we're making games that like are on, you know, Xbox Series X and PS5, but it's also on the Switch, which you could take as a mobile device. So like, it could either be a TV that's this big.
Literally, yeah. You've got to scale
literally
that,
this big. Like, the screen this big. So
both on, like an artistic and technological point of view, like, the fact that we can cover such a range of platforms now, like, even with the whole xCloud thing, that any game can now just be streamed to your phone. That's crazy to consider that from a design and accessibility point of view. Like, that's the...
it doesn't necessarily work most of the time. True. Like, very true. But, I mean... shit, you can play Fortnite on anything, right? Like
literally,
potato.
That's crazy. Yeah,
potato, like, and two sticks sticking out of it, you know, like
that's actually how I was never like big on Fortnite when it first came out. I loved the whole like save the world thing where you like do the forts and that, because I was like, this is an interesting thing building. But then the reason I fell in love with it, like, I did season one, I think, and season two with some of my friends and dropped off, but it was my little cousin being like, oh, like, you want to play Fortnite? Because I play it on my phone. And I was like, yeah, I can just play with you on anything on my Switch. My play is literally everywhere that I could like have those moments where I'm like, oh, co-op, or, you know, like, you know, collab with people on that. I kind of miss those multiplayer moments, but like, accessible multiplayer that like literally anyone could pick up Fortnite and generally have a good time, even if you're just running around. Like, I kind of enjoyed that. And it was like a new perspective, and like, it made me maybe kind of change my old man ways. I'm like, oh, I don't like this new stuff. Fortnite, what is this? I was kind of more accepting of it and being like, you know what, this is actually a pretty cool time, and like, I like that it crosses multiple generations of kind of gamers.
They must be doing something right. I mean, I don't clearly like anyone
making
who's
a
like,
shit ton of money.
I mean, like, the number of users that they have can't be, you know, this is why I'm kind of like, I don't know. I'm not
recently
sure
I was
this
kind
right
of like
now, but because there's like, the whole like the
the copying Fortnite thing that happened very recently, I was not a fan of. Like, it's, you got it, you can't punch down, you know what I mean? When you're the mega corporation, you can't borrow from the indie. The other way is fine. Like, of course, you know, you do.
Well, I mean, Fortnite itself is like PUBG, basically, right?
Basically, so. Yeah, they just learned from the mistakes of PUBG. So maybe it's par for the course. But maybe we should have seen
PUBG
this coming.
PUBG to Fortnite, I don't feel as gross as Among Us. Mm. I don't know
Among
why.
Among Us is literally you're stealing from four people that made a Flash game, you know? Yeah. What I mean, like, that feels weird.
Well,
like,
and on top of it, like, PUBG is not that unique in and of itself. Like,
yeah, okay, it's building so, like, on the shoulders of DayZ and armor and stuff yeah. like that. Like, it's a so refinement it's like,
okay,
of
okay, so you have know. A you have a shooter. You have a, like, this mechanic is not that, you know, new. It's really just, like, 100 players going down to one. But, like, that in and of itself, like, you know, like, WrestleMania is Royal Rumble has been a thing for like however many years, you know, like
Hell in a Cell, let's go.
I mean, and there was already like a, you know, two movies and a comic book and a novel series based on the Battle Royale. So
very true. I guess so, what like, people would make that's the argument why I'm with
kind of like
the...
whatever about like, you know, PUBG for Fortnite, but yeah, Among Us it does kind of
I think it feels weird
for them. In my mouth, yeah.
Yeah, like, people say, oh, but Among Us is just Mafia or Werewolf. I'm like, I get it, but it's the first time that a game specifically had encapsulated that format and that kind of deception gaming into, like, a digestible, accessible format. And, like, yeah. It feels weird to just be like, oh, copy-paste, because, like, yeah, I can take inspiration, but it's pretty, at least from what I've seen and read into it, like, it's pretty egregious. But who am I to say, I guess? No. Like, I can pass my opinions, so.
I don't know.
Yeah,
this is probably as much as we've talked about video games on this podcast. Actually, we typically don't, and certainly not the weekly discourse. This is the first time the discourse was brought up. But
it kind of just like spun around because obviously from like data to like my work and like music taste and that, it was like a weird fly through, didn't I? Like,
yeah.
The rambling's good. We can vary it back though. Like, I think your original question to me was like the gap from music to games, and I said that I ended up working for Nintendo, yeah. And then yeah, that was doing the show stuff, and it's from that I was like, oh, Nintendo's cool, and how can I glue this to like a full-time job? And then that was, oh yeah, community management, because I already kind of did that for theaters and yeah. music festivals, and then that's how I ended up working for my first role with a company called Co-op on Space Team VR. That was really cool. I enjoyed that. Like, VR is my passions. I love like the cool things. The VR still such early in its days of like user engagement and like developing ideas and creating design languages. I'm excited to see the kind of experiences, not even just through games, but even if you look into like rehabilitation and like therapy and how it can help people overcome fears or like just like connect in different ways. I think VR is pretty interesting in that.
Yeah.
I hope people start to see it as more than just, oh, that's another games console. Cause yeah, it is, but I think it's like a whole new way of interacting like with virtual mediums that I think more people need to look into to broaden it outside of lots of tech demos and kind of like games that's what people mainly view it for.
I mean, VR, it's my opinion that VR is the future. It's just, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
You know,
we're close though. Like, we're at the affordability sector. Like, for the Quest 2, Facebook has made so affordable that like $299 for a headset, and now it's got double the storage, 128 gig, and you can jump in, no computer needed, and just have so many cool experiences. Like, that's cheaper than the Xbox or a PlayStation right now.
I don't think it's a price point issue. I think it's more of like, we're not there culturally, and I think we're not there from a development standpoint. I think people have not figured out a video game that people could not live without yet.
For me, it's Beat Saber. I adore Beat Saber, and that and no, VR, Beat Saber's that has been very my cool. entire and that's VR the thing. Fitness
Beat,
regime.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, outside of Beat Saber, what is like? That's really, I feel like that's really the only standout VR game, and I'm not trying to like.
No, that's fair. Like, that's fair. I understand that it's still a niche community, the VR, and the VR it's harder to
but,
find
like,
experiences.
It's not accessible for the most part, and I don't mean that from like a. It's not something like, you know, like it's the opposite of Nintendo right now. Mm. Like, it's not something that you can pick up and like easily like, oh, I want to do that. You know, I think
Facebook
that's still missing.
Getting there. I think this week it was like they've got 10 million Quest 2 users now, which is like pretty up there. That's like up there with the users of like the new Xbox and PlayStation, which, you know, obviously they're still already very, very early in their life cycle. And the Quest, I think, only became a thing a year or two ago. Like,
okay, so the difference between that is that, like, you know, like if you look at like individual hardware sales, like, yes, like that's very impressive. But if you look at like, you know, like I don't think it's particularly interesting to see, like, when you talk, when you think about like user demographics and like psychographics, like there is no Xbox user, right? Like there's basically people who play like console type games, whether or not it's on PC or PlayStation or Xbox, or, you know, sometimes even on mobile devices. So like there's still a lot of like console type experiences that like majority of like video games are either console type experiences or light mobile type experiences. Then that's pretty much like the two, you know, competing ideas in terms of video games at the moment. And VR, like, while it's, you know, it's no longer like this footnote that it was like, let's say like 5 years ago, it still doesn't have like the critical mass to be like, for it to really kind of break through. It's still much early adopter, you know, like
100%. VR only became to a point that users could engage with it at like not even an affordable price point, but like 2016 was when we had the Vive and Rift coming in. That was like, oh, you're paying 500 quid, but this is a look at the future. Now we're down to like 200-300 quid and it's a bit cheaper. But for me, I get you 100%. You're very valid and very true. And I guess because I just love it so much, I guess I look into experiences and find things more than the average person would.
Then again, but, like I'm a producer, so I tend to look at it from like, would I, you know, can I make that my job? And I feel like VR is still way too scary for me to do that.
That's fair. Honestly, yeah, I like it. And like I said before, I'm more interested in it from the perspective of what can we do more than games? Because like there's a cool thing called Sheffield Documentary Festival near me, and they do really cool like immersive theatrical experiences. Like during the pandemic, there was a great thing called The Under Presents. It's one of my favorite VR games. It's this cool like quirky adventure thing that's all like very stylized and art. And they did the production of William Shakespeare's The Tempest in VR, where you bought a little virtual ticket, and it was an interactive Shakespeare play where you could either just watch or you could have an interactive ticket and you do stuff. And it was like a community in VR where like there were two performers leading it and doing the roles and stuff, and the rest of us joined it in the world, and there were like mini games and interactive things. That was mind-blowing. That was like one of the coolest experiences of like art and video games and literature and narrative combining together for me. And like
very exciting. Yeah, I agree. I have some friends that left video games to kind of work in more in the XR, AR, VR space in the non-video game. And it's very interesting to talk to them because clearly what they're doing is so much more like cutting edge than making another console game, which I mean, I love doing that. But it's hard for me to say, like, you know, I'm really kind of pushing anything in terms of like, you know, the boundaries of entertainment.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Like, you can or you can't. Like, you don't have to. Every approach is valid. And like, I love and respect the stuff that me and you do with this, like a smaller scale game project in which we want to do a cool thing or a point or a story or a world. And they're doing like, we're going to assist doctors do surgery from across the world using augmented reality. I'm like, that's sick that the same processes and the same kind of tools can go into making both.
Like, that sounds terrifying, though. I do not want to be involved in any part of the pipeline where somebody could actually die. That's way too much responsibility for me.
It's a different scale for sure.
Okay, so we're gonna dial it back. We're gonna bring it back to video games.
That's cool.
Because this is even though if it's tangentially a video game podcast, it is a video game podcast. So okay, all of that stuff. So like events, theater, music. What did you get out of that you were no longer getting from working in game development?
Well, that's a really good question.
What's something you missed?
I mean, it's a weird thing because like, so for me, I'd say not properly got into video games doing community management full time and it being my 9-to-5 job in January of 2020. So most of my experience of game dev has been during the pandemic. It's been a very work from home kind of like solitary experience. And even though I love my team and we connect through Zoom and the video calls and even how we've gone about working in our studio to make it more of like we have like digital meeting rooms that people can just pop in and out of, so you don't have to like call Alex. You can just hop in a room and if Alex is there, you chat, you do whatever and whatever. Like, it's a more chill version of it. I've missed the kind of interpersonal relationships and the kind of in the same way when I worked in theater, we were in like big offices and stages and we'd tour and chill together. I kind of missed that kind of people element, but I don't think you can't get that from games. It's just my specific experience of doing it.
I mean, there's definitely that in video games. There's huge gaming events that people are involved in, and you know, people go to the office obviously, or at least did. Maybe one day we will.
That's like a limited slice, I guess, of just the whole pandemic. Gaming has been my main thing for working in games. But I guess, like, because from a production, most of it is kind of like a more structural approach. It's like, how do I support and make sure my team can achieve their goals and their milestones? And kind of like, yeah, I still do tests and give ideas, but it's not my job to. My job is to make sure that it happens, that everyone's got their resources, communicate effectively. I guess I miss being kind of boots on the ground more. And whereas, like, when the festival, I was like, we should book this show, or we should do this, or I can paint this thing this way, or I can set up this screen array for a festival, and just doing it. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like my experience with music and theater was much more visceral, where if I was like, I just want to go do a thing, I just did it. And it was like, yeah, and we all just pitched in. Whereas at least in the scale of like indie and maybe the contracts that I work on now, it's like things are much more considered and there are budgets and time scales and things. And it's like at the beginning, it frustrated me a little bit because I think I'm not as used to working as part of a bigger system like that. Whereas like, yeah, in theater stuff, it was like, we want to do this, we're doing it. It's cool. Just blah. Like I kind of missed that kind of instinctiveness. Also, it's not my job to do that immediacy. It's my job to watch over and make sure people can do and interconnect, you know what I mean, which I do appreciate. It's like a new love of like the creation process from approaching it from this angle.
Yeah, people talk about that a lot when they go into production from being a direct contributor, although your pathway is a little bit different. But people who are like, you know, like they go from like being a game designer or a level artist or whatever and then like become a production manager or producer, I think sometimes they have a crisis of faith because they're like, they're no longer touching it.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to balance. I've been lucky in some of the prototypes, I guess, I've got to spin off the ground that I've been able to be a bit more hands-on, and like those have definitely been my highlights so far in working. But it's still like, yeah, like you said, that kind of more hands-off role and being able to do that well and trusting yourself to know that I'm not defined by my output, but like this orchestration and like how I create this structure to support my team who are talented and know what the hell they need to do because they're like great at what they do. Like that has been a new kind of rewarding, and that's the thing I guess I've kind of grown into, and now I see the benefits of, as opposed to when it was more like, I am the creative, I could just do it or change it, you know what I mean? So It's been nice to kind of have a shift of pace and a shift of perspective, but I welcome it. Like I think that's part of, like I said earlier, as long as I'm making and creating things, I think I love what I'm doing. And it's nice to, I think this is the most different approach to creativity that I've had. Because even though like I've had the title before, like across the theater and music spaces, producer, it's a very different kind of role.
Oh, than yeah, games for producer. Sure.
Like even some of my friends that would do production in films, like they're nothing really like what I do in games as a producer. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's really not the same. We're much more kind of a, you know, it's more of a like a project manager than a software. It's probably closer analogous than like a film producer.
I feel like we're like that perfect kind of like, we're like the wall between like the more business structure side and the creative side, that we facilitate the creativity so that the business, who obviously have the money and that, can hit its targets and make sure that everything works in kind of cohesion, and that when there are issues on either side, we could try and be the one to like communicate and get it. Because you know, the guy that's there that's like, oh, this is $2 million budget, it's not going to be on the same wavelength as the person that's like, I've been modeling this for like 3 years, you know what I mean? Like it's a different thing, but the fact that we can be in the middle, I've really appreciated that kind of a kind of perspective. And it's been a whole world of difference, especially in games. Like money doesn't mean anything to me anymore now. Like I mean, like what's like, it's just it's weird when I'm thinking like everything is weird. Time and like, budgets, like, and things now. It's a weird way to look at life.
Yeah,
now
there's
that I can
like
look
how much
at
sandwiches
role.
Cost, and that's still like real money. But like when you start talking about like millions of dollars, that's like
it's weird.
It's
weird.
Just numbers at that point. Like you know,
it's like sim cash in the corner. I just want to type motherload and make more of it. You know what I mean? Like that's what it feels like to me.
Or you know, like you're playing Monopoly or something. You know, yeah, for sure.
It's weird.
Math problems, like one of those, like you know, Johnny went down to the store and bought 2 million apples.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay, let's flip that question around.
Go on.
What do you think your experience in theater and events and music bring to you as a game developer in terms of your process or creative output?
I think, for me, like coming into it, because I don't pretend to be the most experienced producer in games. Like I said, I've only been doing this for just under a year in my current role, but I've really enjoyed the fact that like I love when I'm wrong. I love the fact that I work and employ people that are much smarter and better at me, and I love to delegate to them. Because like, yeah, in theater and music and stuff, like I did bits of acting, but I'm not in the same as my friends that have done drama school are now on West End or Broadway. Like, that's a different level to me. And I think leaning into that, of just, I care about interpersonal relationships and building a good quality of standard there, which I think helps support work relationships. And so that I just value my employees as people and make sure they cover their basics and they're not working too hard. Because the similar stories that we have, like in games over like Crunch and people are working too hard and, you know, exploiting young and junior people, that is the same, if not worse, in film and TV. And so having been through that and seen people, and even myself being burnt out from just giving too much into like a thing that in retrospect, I'm like, I could have just not, like, but I was so lost in the swirl of it at the time that I just thought, yeah, let's burn myself out till I end up in hospital exhausted because of this art must define me. I don't care about that anymore because I've grown past it. And having that perspective while being quite young, because I'm only like, you know, 26, I think it's been really useful that I can help instill a better balance of like, yeah, it's great to be in games and we love what we do and it's a great opportunity that we have, but it doesn't need to define you. And it's good to cover your baseline of like, have you slept enough? Have you eaten enough? Are you happy? Are you getting your mental health looked at through the help and resources available to you? Like, that stuff's important, because if you can have that baseline covered, you are better just by default as a worker. And a lot of people miss that and think, I just have to burn myself out or just throw myself at this problem and I'll definitely prevail. And that kind of altruistic dying game dev image is almost worshipped a bit too much.
That's the thing. Like, I will prevail is like...
No. Like,
there are more problems that you can solve. Like, there are always more problems. Like, if you solve all the problems, like, they'll just give you more problems.
More problems.
So if you keep on throwing yourself at the problems, like, yeah, like, that's not a solution, at least not a long-term solution.
I think that's been the biggest strength to me, because, like, even in bits where I've, like, worked with clients, they're like, I'm not afraid to be like, no, or that doesn't make sense, or that's not, people can't do that, or that's unreasonable. And I would rather fight for, like, at least in the projects I've had to work on so far, fight for like, oh, my team can't do that, or this is unreasonable, and then try and fight that fight as close as I can to give them the more time or more budget or whatever. Like, I come from that angle, whilst also understanding the process and some things need to move and spin because of the game dev and the budget and the monies. But I think that kind of people first side is what I got from working in theatre and music, because they're both, I guess, industries that are so, like, the you know, close to the skin, I guess is the term, I don't really know, but like, people pour their heart into this. Or like, when my friend's making a play about the loss of her mother, and my job is to facilitate and make sure that that's there, that's such a raw fucking, like, that's trying to make sure that vision and story happens. Like I've never worked on a game that's that personal, but I still think that if you can make sure that people are okay and give them the quality of life that you can support and make sure that they're looking after themselves, then the work can also be like good, because they are good and they enjoy what they're doing. And they feel that, oh, if I ask for a holiday, no one's going to shout at me because you're entitled to your holidays. Take your fucking holidays, people. Stop banking them up. They're just going to disappear. Like, you know, like.
Well, I think it's time to wrap up. So I'm going to ask you the last question, which is, what is something you want people to know about theater, events, and music?
I think my message to people is, obviously, you know, we've all been stuck inside and stuff with the pandemic and stuff, and the world's opened up a bit depending where you are, but support local arts is my little vibe. Like, the arts made me, and I'm so happy that I got to have those experiences working in theatre and music, and they really shaped me to who I am. And I want people to be able to still have those opportunities, but like, the pandemic has such as hit the arts so hard that if you can and you feel safe to, and you know, you're vaccinated and everything, please support your local music scene or your bars, whether that do live music, or your little theaters and your amdrams, because they need your help and your resources, because they've had minimal, at least in my country, they've had minimal support to keep going. So that would be my little message to people, that like, you know, maybe you can appreciate my perspective by dipping into your little local art scene and seeing how that has enhanced the lives of the people there or the stories that they can pass on to you.
Thank you very much, Alex. And this was fun. And have a good evening.
Thanks for inviting me. Have a great evening, man.
Thank you for listening. And thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.